second case on the morning call. It's appeal number 082724, United Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers of America versus the National Labor Relations Board. Ms. Halfkenny.
Good morning. The General Counsel of the United Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers of America for the petitioner. May it please the Court. This case comes before the Court on a petition for review of a decision of the National Labor Relations Board. When the underlying unfair labor practice case against aluminum casting and engineering was before this Court in 2000, the Court opined, quote, "This case has lain in labor relations limbo for nearly 6 years, between a union victory in an election that was ultimately set aside and the holding of a new election. In the meantime, the company has, quite happily, we may assume, been operating union-free," end quote. 8 years later, aluminum casting, or ACECO as we call it, is still operating union-free, and workers have not yet been made whole for the 1995 annual wage increase, which the company unlawfully withheld because workers voted for the union. The single issue before the Court now is relatively straightforward. Whether the unlawfully withheld 1995 wage increase should have been built into workers' base wages, increasing their hourly rate by 25 cents, and carried forward until workers are made whole or no longer work for ACECO, which the Board admits is the usual remedy and method for calculating back pay when there has been an unlawful or discriminatory withholding of a wage increase, or when a wage increase occurs during the back pay period in the case of discriminatory discharges. Or, as the Board and the intervener would have it, whether the back pay period should be limited to 1995, thereby treating the wage increase as a one-time bonus. As the Board ruled, and in so ruling, the Board departed from long-held Board precedent without proper explanation. In its earlier decision in 2000, this Court stated, quote, "As long as ACECO has a fair opportunity to prove the proposition it has argued so long, that general wage increases are passé, and it has found a better way to maintain competitive wage levels and corporate quality, the present order does no more than require payment of the 1995 wage increase, which the record as it stands shows would have been given but for the anti-union animus, and any later one supported by the company's normal practice at that time," end quote. This Court never said that ACECO would be excused from making workers whole for the 1995 unlawfully withheld wage increase because of its actions in 1996 or 1997 or any future year, or that it could treat it as a one-time bonus, essentially erasing the wage increase and its impact on wages in future years. But this is exactly what the Board has done. And in order to justify its decision, the Board created facts out of whole cloth by, for example, calling the phasing out of the across-the-board wage increases and the increasing use of merit increases in 1996 and 1997, sort of wiping the slate clean, creating an entirely new merit-based program, when in fact ACECO has consistently taken the position that, quote, "merit wage increases have always been a part of its compensation program for hourly workers." And parenthetically, which the administrative law judge found in the unfair labor case below, that the merit system had existed side by side with the other compensation systems. It was not meant to replace it. The Board also ignored what it admits is the appropriate method for calculating back pay in a case such as this, which they said would be to restore the 25 cents per hour, 25 cents for 1995 and subsequent years.
What does the record actually show as to how this alteration in the method of compensation actually took place?
You mean in 96 and 97?
That's right. I mean, how did it actually take place? Did they say, as of today, nobody in this place is making any money? It's a zero-based analysis. In other words, we go back and we look. there are no givens whatsoever. We're going to just look at your training and your merit, and we're going to fix a wage now. Or did they take and use some baseline and say, you're now making X dollars, we're going to calculate the wage increase you now receive on the basis of merit and training? What happened? It's hard to say, tell from these opinions.
Well, if you look at what the compliance officer Gifford said, what she essentially said, she had sent letters saying, will you please, to ACECO in the compliance when they were putting together the specification to the attorney, and said, can you please show us? You've been arguing that this totally replaced it, you know, that you started using more merit increases. Can you show us when you made a decision? No evidence of that. In the compliance hearing, none of the respondents or ACECO's witnesses were even around in 1995, 1996, and 1997. So there is virtually no evidence of any concrete decision. What we do know is that later on in compliance, they acknowledged that the minimum standards for their job classifications had remained, you know, constant. That you have no evidence that they sort of said, we're going to reclassify workers. You have no evidence that they decided there's this pool of money and we're going to divide it up this way. All you really have is our records that show what people were paid over a period of time. And essentially what the compliance officer said and why you have a conservative compliance specification was that the data wasn't clear for 96 and 97. What it did show was that they didn't feel that they could say, look, you unlawfully withheld 25 or 15 or whatever cents in 1996. What it showed was sort of gray, and they took a conservative approach to that, and they said, okay, you know, the courts, this court upheld that, you know, that people were owed a wage increase of you know, for 1995. And what's a wage increase? I mean, it's a permanent addition to an employee's rate of pay. You can't just sort of wipe it out by you sort of saying, totally new system, wiped clean, new baseline. I mean, it's illogical to assume that the new baseline would exclude the 25-cent 1995 wage increase.
So from your perspective, what is the fair inference from the record as to what the company actually did?
I think what the company did is that they, you know, this is obviously has been a consistently anti-union company, and I think that they decided that they were not going to give another wage increase. They didn't do, as far as we know, their sort of market survey they did, that they said we're not going to do across-the-board wage increases in 1996. And the problem is that the data that you have before you, which is just this respondent's partial summary of what people are paid, I mean, it's like 92 workers out of a total workforce of 400, shows that for 96, 97, 98, up to about, I think it was 2000, 2002, for maybe 2001, that people got merit increases. Some people did. Not all people did. In fact, for these 92 continuing workers, 42 of them got no wage increases at all in 1996. Now, you can't say from that merit increases replace this and it's an entirely new system.
The ones who did not get a wage increase, at what rate were they paid?
I'd have to go back and pull that. I mean, they were essentially paid. Some of them got the same. They were getting the same at the beginning of 1996, or the end of 1996 that they had been getting at the beginning of 1994. Others.
So they got what was they didn't get the 25 cent.
They never got the 25 cents.
So that's in the beginning.
They never got the 25 cents, and they didn't get merit, and they didn't get training.
So in 96, they're going on at that level.
They're going on at their level. Whatever they were making at the beginning of 1995, you know, that's what they're making at the beginning of 1996. and they didn't get at the end of 1996, they didn't get anything in 1996. They didn't get a merit increase, and they certainly didn't get the 25 cents.
January 1996, of course, this other issue isn't resolved, and so they're going ahead with a new plan saying, all right, we're not going along with this whatever they were going to call wage increase or bonus or something. And so they started with a new system and went forward. I guess, parenthetically, Lisa, I'd like, what is the impact of, the financial impact of imposing this 25% increase on all the workers for some duration? I don't know.
I mean, what's the difference? Well,
yeah,
in fact, if you look at the what people actually got is they got a few hundred dollars. You know, by limiting the back pay to 1995, which is sort of treating it as a one-time bonus, they got $400.
Well, the company paid $110,000 or $20,000.
That's
correct.
What's
the impact on the company if your position goes through?
It's going to be probably $1 million. I mean, that's probably what it's going to be.
Well, for how many years?
Remembering what was done with the first compliance thing. I mean, what I'm saying is that people, this is a workforce with a high turnover. So some people, some people would only get back pay for 3 years or 4 years. Some people who were still there, probably a handful, would get back pay for 14 years. So they've essentially been underpaid 25 cents an hour for every hour that they have worked since January 1st, 1995.
And that assumes that the new formula, taken from some sort of a pool, doesn't give other people increases on merit, that had this 25-cent thing been carried forward, there wouldn't have been that size of a pool and that merit pay available.
Well, that sense of a pool, there's actually no evidence that the company ever sat down and said, this is how much money we have to spend on these things. They implemented a number of programs that they felt that they needed to be able to maintain stability in a workforce that was constantly changing. And they had a variety of these programs. The training and development program had been in effect for, quite a number of years. The merit increase had always been part of their program, and they just increased the number of times they were giving it to people. They had an incentive program. They had a pay program. I mean, they had all of these. It's incorrect to say they created a new program.
Cost more than the previous program.
Pardon me?
It had to cost more than the previous program. Because they added these things, and maybe some people got a benefit when others didn't, but I still see an increase obligation from the company to its employees based on the new system.
There actually wasn't. I mean, they keep saying new system. What they did is they stopped giving the across-the-board wage increase for discriminatory reasons, and that over a period of time they gradually increased. If you take all of them together, I mean, there's a sort of a sleight of hand that I think that the company uses in saying that people made more money under this than before. When you actually compare what people were making in 1994 with all of the wage increases that they got, the average worker got more money in 1994 than they did in 1996. So I'm just saying you got to put it all together. You can't sort of say, okay, we're going to measure merit increases here with the total package that people were getting in 1994. It just doesn't work. So you have to compare what was the whole package then and what was the whole package later. And if you even look at that, it's simply not true that they were spending more money in 1996. I just think what's important is that one thinks about what's a wage increase. It's a permanent addition to somebody's rate of pay. They didn't do an evaluation of each worker and say, your wages are going to go up, down, stay the same, whatever, we're putting in a whole new job system. That simply was never done. What the compliance officer found, and is in the original compliance speculation, is that they gradually, gradually increased, and that the data was a gray area to be able to show that they should have been giving the across-the-board wage increase in 1996 and 1997. But that essentially should have zero impact on their obligation to pay a wage increase that workers were due and owing in 1995 which was withheld because they voted for the union. I mean, I think the policy ramifications of this are just enormous. You know, that it allows employers to, with impunity, sort of take away, you know, workers' wage increases because they vote for the union, wait forever for the board processes, you know, and then, you know, benefit from having kept that money themselves for that number of years and guaranteeing that that company is going to remain union-free. Thank you.
Ms. Hoyt.
May it please the court, I'm Joan Hoyt for the National Labor Relations Board. When this case was before the court...
Why did this case take so long? I mean, the preceding case we had was a 1997 incident that we're talking about in 2009, and here we have something that happened in 96, and 13 years later we're fooling around with it. It's been back and forth. And I just don't understand why it takes so long to wrap up something like this.
Your Honor, it's a question I can't answer, but to say that the process before the board sometimes is deliberate and slow. And considering the board's caseload, this is the best the board could have done in terms of time. But I want to start by saying that when the court remanded the case to the board in 2000, it instructed the board that it had taken notice of the arguments that the company raised before the court in the company's brief, that it had changed, made a switch to a new method of compensating its employees. The argument by the union would seem to take you back to the initial argument, but we have moved beyond that because the court took into consideration the union's argument and instructed the board to give the company a fair opportunity to prove its proposition that general wage increases, the ones that that the union now argues, to prove that they are per se and that the company had found a better way to maintain competitive wage levels and corporate quality. The board gave the company that opportunity, and in the compliance investigation, the company showed that it had switched. Now, the union argues that no such switch was made. But in fact, the company had, from the 1993 to the 1994 period, been implementing this training and development program, and it allowed all its employees to participate in this training. And through the training program superseded the across-the-board increase that the company had been given. It is true that over a period of time from 1988, the company had a wage system that had several components, across-the-board wage increases, program adjustment pay, training and development pay. But in 1993, the company, receiving pressure from its primary customer, Chrysler, to sort of reduce defects in the products and reduce costs to the company, the company took it seriously that we are going to switch, and we are going to switch to a training, merit and training, give all these employees the opportunity to train, to be rewarded according to their performance, and so the company gradually switched. Now, there is no dispute, and the fact that a switch was made to a pay system that relied heavily or almost exclusively on merit and training pay is not in dispute. That's a finding. What is at issue here is whether or not the 25 cents that the company unlawfully withheld, and the board so found, and the court enforced, the company withheld a 25 cents across the board increase in 1995 should the company have continued, should the board's remedy require the company to give those employees that 25 cents up until they terminate employment with the company, and the board determined that no, it should not, because there was this new system in place as of January the 1st, 1996, and through that system, the company had set aside a pot of money for its labor cost, which did not include across-the-board increases because that had been phased out. And
the timing is what's very troubling here, though.
Yes, I understand that, Your Honor.
The phasing out or the ending of it happened to coincide with a effort to unionize the company workforce.
But Your Honor, there is no dispute about the phasing out because it's unchallenged that as of the 1st of January, 1996, it was a lawful switch. That's not challenged. It's a board's finding. It's not challenged. So if we move beyond the fact that there was this phasing out, now the question is, should the company have continued to maintain the pre-switch 25 cents in after it switched to a new system? And the board said no. Why did the board say no? Because the board found that the employees were not deprived the opportunity to get merit and training increases because the program was put in place for every one of them to participate to show that through their performance they could get the increases under this new program.
But what was the baseline that was used when they did give someone a merit increase or a training increase? They had to be building off some pre-existing level of compensation. What was it?
The pre-existing level of compensation, Your Honor, was what existed, say, on December the 31st of 2005. There was no...
Of 2005?
Sorry, of 1995. The employees' pay that was in place, it is true that the slate was not wiped clean. That pay, based on that pay January the 1st.
Did that baseline include or not include the 25 cents that they had apparently been deprived of earlier because of the unfair labor practice?
It would not have included it, Your Honor.
Why not?
Because at that time, the case was still pending, the unfair labor practice case was still pending before the court, before the board and the court at that time, and no decision had been made as to whether the company would be obligated to pay that 25 cents.
Well, it seems what the board did is that they definitely in 1995 deprived the wage increase to punish the effort for the union.
That's
and that
correct.
Was later found. As of the 1st of January on 1996, this finding is already a fait accompli, that they did change the system.
That's correct.
And in changing that system, they were going to base all, instead of across-the-board increases, all increase, all improvement is going to be based on merit with these various incentives that were pre-existing and some additional ones, as I understand.
That's correct, Joe.
Now, I know this, majority of the board, as opposed to the dissent, set out two different things. Now, in our standard of review, it seems that either way, whichever way they had gone, could have been, we'll say, reasonable. There's substantial evidence to go either way. I think, and I'm looking at our standard of review, what is it as far as what we can and can't do here, given that standard of review?
Well, the board is allowed, the court gives the board substantial deference on its decision as long as there is substantial evidence in the record to support the findings, and the findings have a reasonable basis in the law. That is the standard for back pay proceedings. Your Honor. The board determined that if the company were to be asked to include the 25 cents from 1996 thereafter, that would create a windfall and set up a system that the company had not allotted money in its pot of labor costs for. And the board's...
Well, it's free to adjust that situation, though, in light of the earlier ruling of the board as enforced by this court, right?
Can you repeat that, Your Honor? I don't think I heard you.
It's why it seems to me that, yes, there's this pot of money and what have you, but the fact of the matter is the board, or rather the company, is at liberty to reallocate that in light of the... could have reallocated that money in light of the decision of this court affirming the earlier decision of the board that there had been an unfair labor practice and people had to be made whole because of it.
That's true, Your Honor, but I want to read from a portion of the court's decision because the court said that if, for example, in the compliance proceedings relating to the year 1996, the company introduced evidence that it had adjourned across-the-board increases forever, and a general counsel could not show that this was untrue or pretextual, not only would this suffice to excuse the company from making any adjustments for 1996, but it would establish this new baseline for future years as well. Taking that into consideration, the board determined reasonably that the switch that was made in 1996 was a lawful switch. It's not shown to be
Why doesn't that language simply mean you've got to give them the remedy that the board for what they were deprived of because of the unfair labor practice? That establishes the new baseline. Now, what you do in 1996 about future raises and all, that is entirely at the company's discretion. But a new baseline, including the 25 cents, is hereby established.
Your
Why
Honor,
can't you read that language that way?
I suppose, Your Honor, it could be read both ways, but I read it to support the board's position here because when the unfair labor practice that this court enforced was before the court, the payments or withholdings from 1996 onwards were not alleged in that complaint. It was the 1995 withholdings that were found to be unlawful. And the board's decision here to say that the company unlawfully withheld that 25 cents and should pay the employees that 25 cents seemed to satisfy the rulings made by this court in the prior case. If Your Honors have no further question, I see my time has expired and the board rests on its brief. Thank you.
Mr. Kinney.
May it please the court. My name is Kevin Kinney. I represent the intervener, Aluminum Casting. In response to the question regarding the standard of review, in remedy cases, and this is a remedy case, is significantly higher. If you go back to Virginia Power, if you go back to Shertan, the Supreme Court decision, if you go back to Geske and Sons out of this court, it is literally a standard of unless there is a patent attempt by the board to achieve purposes that end run the act, it will be enforced. This is not the underlying unfair labor
How
practice
about
case.
That the board misapprehended this court's earlier opinion?
That's it, to
they
the
made
extent
a mistake.
That
they made a mistake. They just goofed up, read the language wrong.
If the board misread this court's decision, okay, or at least applied it in a different way than this court would now apply it, I think what the real issue, again, is, and I think Ms. Hoyt just hit it, is that the only issue, the only unfair labor practice before the board was the 1995 issue. So 96 and subsequent years, which I really think is what counsel was arguing, is there's no unfair labor practice that moves out beyond 1995. And so I think at the end of the day, that's where you're always going to end up back at. That'll be the place you'll end up at. There's no unfair labor practice beyond 95. So in terms of the standard of review, it is really a very high deferential standard. When I was reading, when I read counsel's brief for the union, I said, why are we spending so much time, so many pages of this brief, dealing with whether or not aluminum casting had gone to a new wage compensation system? And then finally I got to read about the Florida Steel case and the Achilles Construction case. Those are the two big ones that deal with this issue of rippling wages forward. And then I said, now I understand. Because once you look at Florida Steel, once you look at Achilles, okay, the linchpin in that case is that neither of those employers had ever done anything to modify or adjust or go to a new compensation system, and the board said, you haven't done anything, boom, 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 we're going to move you forward on this type of program. Then I understood why there had been 6 or 7 or 8 pages written about an issue that wasn't an issue in compliance. That brings me to my next point. Under the board's rules and regulations, 102, rule and reg 10252, the compliance, the region makes a compliance determination. If you don't like that compliance determination, then what you have to do, what you must do, is take an appeal to the General Counsel of the NLRB in Washington, D.C. Okay? And if you don't like the decision you get from the NLRB General Counsel in D.C., then you take it to the NLRB. Judge Evans, to your point of why does this case take so long, okay? I mean, that's one of the procedures that they have in place, okay? Appeals from the appeals. Now, in this case, the region determined that aluminum casting had adopted a new compensation system, and there is no appeal taken from that decision. There's no, hey, wait a minute, you haven't implemented a new compensation system. You haven't implemented a new merit training compensation system. And so then when we finally go to the compliance hearing, that issue is not even in debate. In fact, in my brief, I said, you know, that ship sailed the day we sat down in front of the administrative law judge. But now today we're back in front of this court arguing about that underlying compliance determination that the regional office made that was never appealed. That's a problem. If they disagreed with the regional office's compliance determination, then they had to take it to the board so we don't end up back at the board and back in the courts and back in the boards. There is a procedure to be followed. I think there was a kind of a general question out here in terms of this concept of what the board really did is they sat back and they said, you know, we've got a situation here where clearly the company violated the law by not giving this wage increase in 1995, and it's going to cost you $108,000 or thereabouts plus another $100,000 worth of interest to satisfy that amount, and that's been satisfied. But the board also said, you know, we're not going to get in a situation, though, where we now have this regional determination never appealed that there's a new compensation system, and we're not going to sit back and say we're going to, in effect, create a new and two-tier wage program that would literally be in effect yet today. You would have people that got hired on the wrong side of December 31, 1995, who would be in one tier of compensation, and another tier of people hired on the other side of December 31 in another tier of compensation. The question was for how long? The answer is forever, okay, until they die or quit or otherwise end up with no employment at the company. And the board says we're not going to establish a two-tier wage system at aluminum casting. We're not going to do that. And the other thing too is that I think the board says there were two discrete acts here. Okay, there was a discrete illegal act. Okay, the withholding of the 95 wage, and a very discrete legal act, which was the change in the 96 compensation system. And the board says we're going to punish you for what you did wrong in 95, but we're not going to punish you for what we did in 1996. And the board made a decision, okay, maybe not perfect, but well within their administrative expertise. Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Halfkenny, your time has expired. We'll give you a couple minutes.
This question of the two-tier, you know, it's longstanding precedent that any uncertainties must be resolved against the party that did the illegal acts. I mean, here, you know, any uncertainty about what to do on January 1st, 1996, or any time in 1996, really was based on their unfair labor practice charges in 1995. You know, so that, you know, it's if they had given people the 25 cent across the board wage increase, they'd know exactly what wages people were to be getting on January 1st, 1996. The board admits that the baseline that they established in 1996 did not include the 25 cent across the board wage increase. I mean, and therefore, obviously, people were never made whole, and they can't be made whole from sort of treating, you know, withheld across the board wage increase as if it were a Thanksgiving turkey and a one-time bonus. As to the waiver question, I think I addressed that in my reply brief. You merely need to say essentially, to look essentially at what the compliance said, basically that the region took a conservative approach, that it was a gray area. They were not seeking additional wage increases for 1996. And that it was problematic also because any of the data was in the control of the respondent, which parenthetically they were unwilling to share with the union. So there was actually no finding in the compliance, original compliance specification that there was a totally new system that had been created. I mean, this is sort of something that the judge in the underlying, the administrative law judge in the underlying system said, look, at that time he thought this was all made up for trial. So they bring it back again here. So thank you very much.
Could I ask one question for you?
Yeah.
And maybe it's not known. If Member Walsh's position had been applied, and say that was the majority position,
right,
and retroactively his formula, whatever, would be applied, has anyone come up with a figure of what that would cost? Even a ballpark figure?
I'm trying to remember. I mean, you know that they took about $100,000. I'm trying to remember.
That was for 1 year.
That was for 1 year.
Yeah, but I'm
talking about 362 workers. My memory is that at the time of the compliance hearing in 2003, it was about $750,000, or maybe that's what we said we were willing to settle for. I mean, that the board was willing to settle for at that time.
And what would it? And so, would that be the same now, or would that?
Well, we're 5 years later from now, so certainly the interest would be greater. There are very few workers who would have been continued forward. I believe there were only in 2003 50 or 60 of the original workers who'd been there in 1995. I'll guarantee you that in the last 5 years, that, and certainly with layoffs, which I expect have happened in this business, which is connected to the auto industry, there are very few left now. So it's going to be limited depending on when people left.
The question is they'll stay in business, too. That's another question. Sort of,
pardon me?
Where they stay in business with some big impact all of a sudden. Now, that's all. A curiosity, I guess.
Well, they didn't make that argument.
I know.
I mean, they never made that argument. They made a lot of other arguments, but not that one.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you to both counsel.